Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
It's spring, and for farmers and gardeners, that means it's time to ramp up ground preparation for field and backyard crops. What should gardeners be doing right now to prepare for planting? Will Alaska farmers try any new crops this season? Practical tips for growing fresh food from your own plot of land and learning more about farms and farmers markets is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. So you may be thinking, I can't wait to get out in the yard and rake up all those dead leaves and other debris on my lawn to bag up and toss in the landfill. But wait, please don't. Although the temptation to rake your lawn until it's bare of anything but grass sprouts may be strong after a long winter and the sad state of how our yards and garden beds look after the snow melts. But the reality is, all that leaf and twig debris is rich in nutrients for your yard, and if your lawn could talk, it would tell you to read Jeff Lowenfeld's Sunday column in the Anchorage Daily News that advocates for leaving the leaves. Like Mr. Lowenfeld's, I also hoard bags of leaves to add to my compost bin, and recently opened one that was beautifully mulchy. I put some in the compost and the rest on some garden beds. Today, we'll talk with experts about the benefits of not hauling away leaves, as well as learn other ways of aiding soil health for better food production, and flowers too, yes. On the line with us from Fairbanks is Heidi Rader. Heidi is a professor at the University of Fairbanks Extension Office. She blogs about gardening and creates videos on soil preparation and planting. Also on the line with us today is Brad St. Pierre. Brad is a farmer and owns Goosefoot Farm. He is the executive director of the Tanana Farmers Market Association. Brad is also the board chair of the Alaska Farmers Market Association. And in the studio with me today is Teresa Brown.
Hello.
Hi, Teresa. Teresa wears a lot of gardener hats in Anchorage. She is the network coordinator for Anchor Gardens. She's the organic gardening coordinator for Yardacopia, a program run by ACAT, Alaska Community Action on Toxics. And she's working on some other ag-related efforts in South Central that we'll learn more about this hour. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have to admit my bias for this topic. I grew up in farm families and have been a gardener delighting in my own backyard food crops for decades. To get us started, Heidi, describe the different growing zones in Alaska and how that greatly affects the type of food you can grow there. From the rainforests of southeast to the Arctic tundra, Alaska has a lot of different microclimate zones. Even Anchorage garden varieties can vary quite a bit from one side of the city to the other. Talk about what people should know and where they can get detailed information so their efforts aren't frustrated by trying to grow the wrong thing for their region.
Oh, sure. So the USDA plant hardiness zone is one thing to consider, that, but that's based only on the average minimum temperature where you live. So that's particularly important for perennials. I really like the Alaska Garden Helper, which is on a University of Alaska website, and that talks about your growing season length, your average precipitation, as well as the average temperature throughout the growing season. So I think that's a great resource, and that's by city or town. You can look up that information. And you can also check out past weather data and really drill down onto what your microclimate may be where you live.
All right. Thanks for getting us started there. And for all of you, I started off the show today by talking about why you should not rake your yard until it's naked of leaves and twigs. For decades, I did exactly that, vigorously raking every leaf and twig off my lawn, out of my flower and food beds. I remember my mom saying, she grew up in farming families too. She would say, it's good to scratch the earth's back after a long winter. She was a vigorous raker also. Now I know to leave things alone, as Jeff Lohenfeld said in his column, leave twigs smaller than your thumb on the yard and just grind them up with your mower when it's dry enough to mow. Brad, your thoughts about soil amending, both for farmers and gardeners this time of year?
Yeah, well, it's really important. As a regenerative vegetable farmer, we really believe that the soil is what is growing the plants. It's not a growing medium. It's the nutrients that you're building in healthy soil creates healthy plants. And the introduction of organic matter is incredibly important to a healthy garden or a healthy farm. And so, yeah, I haven't read the article, but I think, yeah, leaving more things to produce more organic matter is a good idea in your gardens and your fields.
Well, and it also, I've realized, especially in a bed that I have in my front yard, it's around a big clump of birch trees, and the soil dries out so quickly there. I imagine that birch tree has a lot of tiny little roots that are just grabbing every bit of moisture it can. And so leaving a thick layer of leaves on that bed in particular really helps keep that moisture in the soil too, so that helps things. Thanks for that, Brad. Teresa, describe how Anchor Gardens got started and how people can get involved.
Oh, we started in 2020, right at the beginning of COVID, where the Anchorage Permaculture Guild was noticing this uptick of Victory Gardens happening in the lower 48 and looking at empty shelves in our grocery store and said, let's bring that movement to Anchorage. But let's call it Anchor Gardens and let's lean heavily toward permaculture, which is a regenerative, holistic design system. And
describe what's meant by permaculture.
It's a design system. And first and foremost, it's more than just gardening. It's how we can work with nature, the forces that are inherent in nature. And it's a design system with heart, earth care, people care, and fair share. We have 12 principles, the first one being observe and interact. So you would observe a piece of land for, you know, ideally 12 months before you do a design. And you track things like, where does the sun move across the land, the low spots, where's wind come from, where's wildlife, where's, you know, all of that. And so so you're working with those forces in nature. And it's elegant. It's all about stacking functions and the relationships between the elements that you're putting together, like in your backyard, the chicken coop to the compost to the, you know, the greenhouse to the gardens, the herb garden, like different zones. Mm-hmm. And so it's a roadmap for how we can better live and provide for ourselves. And so back to Anchor Gardens, we started in 2020 with the idea of offering mentors in every neighborhood. And we had this permaculture guild, this group of avid gardeners already, this network already in place. So we define a neighborhood as one that has a community council. So there's approximately 37. And it quickly went from that in the first month or two to getting a vacant lot right next to City Market downtown, turning that into a permaculture garden, community garden, to having seed and seedling exchanges, garden picnic tours, stockpiles where we bring together these raw materials, these waste streams from businesses that we teach how to layer and create a compost pile, which you would plant directly in. Which is lots of leaves as another reason for keeping those leaves. That's an important carbon source in the system. And we create these stockpiles that make it easy for Anchorage gardeners to come to one place and get what they need. And the best part about it is it's all free. We don't charge.
And this weekend, you're building a community garden. Tell us where it will be located and what's meant by this community garden. Who can use it?
So May 10th, Mother's Day, we're doing, I'm teaching a class at 1 p.m., 1 to 2, on lasagna gardening. Another name for that is sheet mulching. And that's kind of what I was just describing of these different waste streams where we're layering carbon, nitrogen, and we're having it at 14th and Ingra in Fairview. This is our second community garden in that neighborhood. We're choosing that neighborhood primarily because it is a food desert, and we do see a need of food insecure neighborhood. And one of our taglines for Anchor Gardens is building food security one garden at a time. And what a community garden does is it provides residents of that neighborhood a place to grow if they don't have land or a balcony. It grows community. It does, the impact to a neighborhood is so much more than just a garden. We also plan to have our free farm stand there as well later in the summer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that as we go along too.
Yeah.
So people in Fairview, if they want to get involved, they can...
Yeah, so we encourage folks to stop by. The class is 1 to 2, and then the class is building the garden, yeah. 2 to 5 with a barbecue afterward. Residents that live in Fairview that help build a garden have priority for a garden plot.
Sure.
And then we encourage, then the next sort of tier would be residents of Fairview in terms of getting a garden plot there.
That's fantastic. I love to see those efforts. And as you said, it helps build community. People are coming together, talking as they're planting or harvesting, sharing things. It's a beautiful idea. Brad and Heidi, maybe Heidi, you start us off here. What kind of pruning or trimming should people be doing now? Or is it too late for any sort of pruning? I was told to trim my cherry tree in February before sap runs. Is that accurate? Are there other times of the year when it's safe to trim, especially, you know, your perennial things?
Yeah, basically anytime the plants are dormant is a good time to prune. The advantage of waiting until spring is that you kind of see what happened over the winter. Maybe a moose came through or there was some snow damage. So I prefer to prune in the winter just based on, and then you can see what's happened out there. Here in Fairbanks, it's not too late to prune, but it's getting to be close to when you may not want to prune. I did a YouTube video with Charlotte Porter on raspberries this last summer, and she prunes her raspberries during the summer as well. So it just kind of depends on the different plant, when and how you prune. So definitely look up specific directions for whatever it is that you do have to prune.
Well, and the instruction I got to trim my cherry tree in February was from my son who lives in Minnesota. So I thought, you know, it's probably a little different trimming schedule yeah. here in Alaska. Brad, you described your farming operation, Goosefoot Farm, as a diversified regenerative farm. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, so diversified means we grow a lot of different crops. So I tell people often we grow from arugula to zucchini, from A to Z, lots of different produce, and we grow hay and honey and fruits and berries. And regenerative, you know, we believe that we're just a piece of a system, and we try to grow in a manner that is goes along with natural processes. We believe in building soil, reducing the amount of breaking up of soil structure as we can through tillage, and using cover crops and organic fertilizer and compost to feed the plants and the soil. And so that's and you know, the regenerative model in Alaska, these small scale diversified farms are really the fastest growing sector of the agricultural industry in Alaska right now. And we are producing some of the most healthy, nutrient-dense food that you can that way, and a lot of food on a little bit of space.
All right, thank you. I want to remind our listeners that if you just joined us, this is Talk of Alaska. And today we're talking about the planting season in Alaska. We have on the line with us Brad St. Pierre, who is the owner of Goosefoot Farm. Brad is the executive director of the Tanana Farmers Market Association and the board chair of the Alaska Farmers Market Association. Heidi Rader is also on the line with us from Fairbanks. Heidi is a professor at the UAF Extension Office. She creates videos on soil preparation, planting, and other garden-related topics. And in the studio with me today is Teresa Brown. Teresa is the network coordinator for Anchor Gardens, also the organic gardening coordinator for Yardacopia, a program of ACAT. Brad, you talked just a minute about this, but in an earlier interview also, you mentioned that Alaska went from 13 farmers markets in 2005 to 65 today, and Alaska leads the nation in the number of new and beginning farmers. That was such a big surprise to me. Tell us about these new farmers and the size of their operations.
Yeah, it's a really exciting sector of growth to see the farmers markets around the state popping up. Through the last USDA census, there was a nearly 20% increase in the number of farms in Alaska, which is the highest increase of any state. And the majority of that growth are on farms that are smaller than 9 acres that are selling direct to the end user through CSA subscriptions, farm stands, and farmers markets. And so I think the correlation between this increase in the number of farmers and the number of farmers markets is very correlated. And if we are going to empower the producers in our state to produce more food for our residents, then we need to give them more opportunities to connect with them. And farmers markets are the vehicle that is really working for that scale of farming in our state. And yeah, it's a really exciting time to be a farmer in Alaska. The value that the residents of Alaska put on locally grown food is amazing. Yeah.
Tell us about the Tanana Farmers Market. You'd mentioned that it's the longest running in the state. Who's involved there? Is it mainly farmers? Is it farmers and gardeners? Who comes?
Yeah, so the Tanana Valley Farmers Market is the longest continuously running farmers market in the state of Alaska. It was started in 1973. And our market's comprised of farmers and makers and artists and prepared food and value-added food producers. It's definitely the backbone is still farmers. We had 26 farmers at the farmers market last season. And, you know, these aren't all produce farmers. We have farmers that grow flowers and raise honey and poultry and pork and beef and peonies and mushrooms and microgreens. And so there's real diversity in the types of farms that you can find at the market. Oh, and plant starts, another one that some of our farmers produce. We're a nonprofit organization and we are here to serve the community. You know, I think it's important that towns around our state have a vibrant community gathering place around food and farmers markets. And this one especially has fulfilled that for Fairbanks.
Heidi, you grew up in a family of enthusiastic gardeners. You had your own plot as a kid. Tell us about your early gardening days. And you said you favor purple veggies. Tell us about why.
Sure. So I grew up in a cabin without running water here outside of Fairbanks. And so we used rainwater for the garden. I got my own small plot at a young age, and I remember being very excited about that. I had my own garden starting, 4 or 5 years old. My mom was a little bit too good at growing zucchini, so that took me a while to grow to love zucchini. And so, you know, my first job was also working at a farm here in Fairbanks, growing roses in a greenhouse, actually, and tomatoes, cucumbers, a variety of poultry. And that was at age 13 in 1995, and also selling those at the farmers market, the Tanana Valley Farmers Market. So I don't know how many there were in the state at that time, but I think local foods were less mainstream than the importance of it was less mainstream for that. And I remember just not being able to believe that I didn't sell out every time at the farmer's market. And I would go home with dozens of gorgeous roses of all colors, which was nice too, but I would have rather sold those. So I also worked for Calypso Farm and basically Basil and Ann's Greenhouse. So I've, yeah, I've been very interested in farming and gardening here in the Tanana Valley, and now sharing that information out in villages and whatnot too. But yeah, on the purple vegetables, I guess I like to say my favorite vegetables are purple. So cauliflower, purple carrots, purple peppers, they're really high in antioxidants. And I think that that's also a great reason to grow a garden, is that you can grow these unique vegetables you may not be able to find in the grocery store.
Well, I had to laugh when you mentioned zucchinis, because when I was in the Midwest, still before I moved to Alaska, I remember that late in the summer, you didn't want to answer your door to the neighbors because they always came with armloads of zucchini. Everyone was sharing zucchini everywhere. It was a little bit, so you had to hide in your house to not answer the door. So
I think you only need one zucchini plant.
Yeah, I think so too. Teresa, when someone wants to try gardening and has no experience, what do you advise for a good way to get started, both in terms of types of plants and soil preparation?
Well, I definitely recommend filling out our survey or joining Anchor Gardens, because we first and foremost connect you to a mentor in your neighborhood. And that is that's free. It doesn't cost anything. And you can ask those questions on a very casual one-on-one basis. I would also recommend coming to any one of my classes. And that's, you could check that out through ACAT's website, look up Yardacopia or Anchor Gardens. I often partner the two gardening groups together. And like I said, there's a workshop coming up this Sunday, but I'll be teaching more classes as well. You can also find me at the Saturday markets. I also grow and sell and bring to market myself. And I end up doing these mini classes at the market talking about all things gardening. And Cooperative Extension has a lot of material on all kinds of vegetables and growing, and if you have problems with slugs or storage, you know. So I love to partner with them as well. But when I teach, I always recommend start with like what you enjoy. What do your kids enjoy? Carrots, potatoes, beets. But also don't be afraid to fail, because those are our greatest teachers, and you can push the boundaries. Every season, I will try new varieties or new vegetables in zones that don't necessarily recommend those things, and I will push the boundaries because our weather is changing, and so it's kind of exciting.
Yes, a little bit frightening, but also exciting, because
yeah,
it's
true.
Opening doors. But we'll talk a little bit about climate concerns in a bit. But let's go to the phones for a moment before we take a break here. Lauren is in Anchorage. Hello. Lauren? Well, Lauren is not answering us. Let us try another caller then. Todd is in Anchorage. Are you there, Todd?
I am. Thanks for the show, folks. I have a quick announcey thing and then a question. The announcey thing is the Spinard Boys and Girls Club has a seed and plant exchange coming up on the 17th, that's Sunday, and from 1 to 4 p.m., and it should be pretty good for exchanging and getting different seeds and plants.
What day is that? What's the date again?
The 17th of May.
17th. Okay, great. And yeah. I see that you have concerns about something that is kind of my kryptonite to wind.
Listen, I live in Rabbit Creek, kind of in the hills, and the wind up here scours everything. It can strip leaves and stuff. It really gets bodacious up here. And then I don't have a huge amount of in-ground gardening space, and you know, I don't have enough for really a lot of potatoes and onions. I'm wondering, you know, like tomatoes, for instance, and green peppers, I can only try by putting them in pots and then moving them inside when wind, you know, gets up there. So what are your thoughts for these things?
Yeah, Heidi, I know that you also are not a fan of wind, as it also bothers me greatly. Is high tunnels, are high tunnels the answer for folks who are in conditions like that where there's too much wind?
Yeah, you can get real beefy greenhouses. That's a potential. I think also a windbreak on the north side, or see which side the wind is usually coming from. I've seen in Fairbanks, and I wrote about this on my blog, but a fenced garden with greenhouse plastic. I know if the wind's too intense, that may not be an option, but I really like that option because it still allows the sunlight in while blocking the wind. And so that's an option. I think too that here in Fairbanks, it has gotten windier, and particularly in the spring when you're planting seeds, you want to keep those seeds moist, and that can be really challenging. So I like to use frost cloth to hold in the moisture on those seeds is helpful. Maybe having, you know, you don't want trees really close, but using trees as a natural windbreak could be an option too. So.
All right. Well, I hope.
I make a quick comment?
Teresa.
I'm so happy that our caller mentioned the seedling exchange. I'm actually putting that event on.
Oh.
And that is, so thank you for that plug. That's a partnership between the Anchorage Permaculture Guild, ACAT Yardacopia, and Anchor Gardens. And it's like our 14th year that the Anchorage Permaculture Guild's been putting that on. And it's a garden swap, used garden materials.
Mm.
It's a seedling exchange of perennials and annuals.
Ooh, I love it. I'm going to be there.
There'll be seeds there as well. It's a potluck. So it's open to everybody.
All right. Well, thanks.
And if I could add one more thing on the wind, in very windy areas such as the Aleutian Pribilof Island region, they use geodesic dome greenhouses.
Yeah, that I'm sure that's a good way to deal with windy conditions, to kind of deflect that wind away instead of letting it hit a straight side head on. All right. Well, good luck, Todd. We hope that you can find some methods that work for you. We've got a gardening question by email before we take a break. This is from Tracy, who writes, I have moved to a no-mow, no-pesticide garden despite the widespread use of poisonous chemicals in my neighborhood. She writes, my front yard meadow is coming along nicely despite the pushback from neighbors about the wildness and seed distribution. How can I educate neighbors on the devastating effects of pesticides? Thanks for taking my question. Oh boy, we could spend the whole hour on that probably.
I would say, please send them to Alaska Community Action on Toxics website, because we have a treasure trove of information. We also do a Shea podcast every month on toxic chemicals. Our Yardacopia newsletter, we've had a three-part series on glycosulfates, where this month our newsletter is going to focus on how you can restore your yard or gardens that you might have sprayed Roundup on. So all is not entirely lost if you've used that product.
And please don't use that product.
Yes, that's right.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take more calls and questions about gardening in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the planting season in Alaska today with Brad St. Pierre, who is the executive director of the Tanana Farmers Market Association and the board chair of the Alaska Farmers Market Association. Heidi Rader is a professor at UAF Extension Office, and she produces videos on soil preparation and planting and other great garden-related topics. And Teresa Brown is in the studio with me today. She is the network coordinator for Anchor Gardens, also the organic gardening coordinator for Yardacopia, a program of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, or ACAT. Let's see if Lauren is there now. Hello, Lauren.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm so glad you're doing this show. I have two questions. I have soil that doesn't seem like it's not rich like it used to be. And they're in boxes made out of file cabinets. And I would like to know, should I use deer manure, or what is the best thing to put in there to amend my soil? And I don't have a compost bin. And then my other question is, how early can I start seeds?
Do you mean in the ground or
outside?
Outside. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for those questions. We'll let the experts answer here. But I just have to say that it cracks me up every time I see in the store bags of steer manure, because I don't understand why they feel the need to put steer on the package. It just always cracks me up. Coming from farms, that's kind of hysterical. But please, let's help Lauren understand what she should do for the beds that she's gardening in old filing cabinets. That's kind of a cool way to reuse old filing cabinets. I got a couple of those. Maybe I'll try that. What should she be doing with that soil? It sounds like it's tired.
With cooperative extension, we always recommend first getting a soil test, and fall is a great time to do that. You can probably still do that this spring. We have information on how to sample your soil, where to send it, and what type of tests to request. And then we can also help with the recommendation and interpreting that test. So how much of either conventional or organic fertilizer? There's lots of different options, so we're not going to say one is the best one necessarily, but we'll recommend a variety of amendments. Adding organic matter is always a good thing in your garden, so that comes from compost, that could be peat, that could be leaves, lawn clippings, all those kind of things, manure.
And a question that I have for you, Lauren, is do the boxes sit right on the ground, and is there access? Are they open to the ground so that worms and things can work their way up into those garden areas if they want to, or are they closed off? Lauren, are you there?
Cement blocks, so they can't get in touch with anything that could crawl up in there.
Okay, so they're closed off. All right. I like things that are open. My compost bin is open to the ground so that worms can get up in there and other little critters can get up there and help work that soil.
Drainage is also important. So you wouldn't want them to fill with water if there's no way for them to drain.
Yeah. Keeping the soil so it's not too wet. A lot of plants don't like wet feet.
Is it possible to start a compost pile in your yard, Lauren?
I'm not allowed to.
Oh, okay. You're in an area where you can't do that.
Well, the Midtown Garden Depot, which is located Chechako and Benson, has a compost hub, and you're welcome. It's open to all of Anchorage. We've got manure there. We've got a compost hub, wood chips, leaves, used pots, things of that nature. Yardacopia manages it, and we make it available to everyone free. And so you're welcome to bring kitchen scraps there. You're welcome to take compost and then add that to mix it with a little manure, perhaps, and add that to your garden bed.
From steers or cows, either one.
Yeah, right.
Or bulls. Also, make sure if you do take your kitchen scraps that you don't take any meat or bones, nothing like that. It can only be vegetable matter, eggshells, those kinds of things. All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Nicole is in Eagle River. Hello.
Hey, good morning. I have a question about annuals. 2 years ago, I bought a bunch of nice nasturtiums and other hardy annuals from a local big box store, took them, put them in the garage because it was still getting a little cold at night. And when I knew it was warm enough, I put them out there and I burned them all. And the nice greenhouse people post back told me later on there's a schedule to kind of acclimate greenhouse grown annuals to outdoor Alaska nice sunshine. And I have promptly forgotten it. And I'm also wondering what's a good date to where they can just sit outside. You know, I can actually put them in my planter boxes. So I guess the question is, how long do I rotate them out from inside to outside, hours per day, that kind of a thing, and just so I don't kill my plants again?
Oh, that's such a great question. Thank you, Nicole, for that, because that trips up a lot of people who are new to gardening. They go buy these beautiful young starts and put them outside, and 2 days later, they're all sunburned and dead. So you definitely have to, if you're buying from inside plant stock. You definitely have to harden those plants off. If you're buying from organizations, greenhouses, and other places that have outdoor racks of plants, those are already pre-hardened, so you should be okay with those. But help Nicole here. Teresa, what should the schedule be? When you're buying indoor greenhouse plants, start them in some shade and gradually an hour or two a day maybe into the sun?
Yeah, because the indoor grown plants are not used to the conditions outside, wind or cold temps. And so the idea is that you slowly expose them to the outdoor elements, usually 1 or 2 hours a day. So you're kind of schlepping them in and out. And then each week, you're increasing that time. I'll tell you my cheat, which is because I grow and sell at market, I'm doing a large volume. I put up one of my 10 by 10 tents and I wrap it with like a polymeth cloth, which creates shade because you don't want direct sun and you don't want wind touching your little babies. And I just bring out my trays and trays and trays of starts and I keep them on that tent and I keep them there. And I don't schlep them in and out because that's too much work. But after a couple of weeks, you can, I think, safely say that they're hardened off. So you have the option of schlepping them in and out, increasing the amount of time that they're outside, again, in shade and protected from wind, and increasing the length of time each week that you're doing that. Or you could do my cheat way.
Well, I hope that helps, Nicole, and good luck this year with some nice annuals for your yard. Heidi and Brad. Brad, did you want to add
something? I was going to say, I think another option is to source your starts from a farmer at the farmer's market, because they have more than likely been starting them in a greenhouse here in Alaska. And those plants are more prepared to be put out and come out in a timely manner as well.
Oh, that's such a great idea. And also, that farmer that grew those starts can help you with some really good, solid information. Unlike sometimes, right. I was in a big box store one day and I heard a clerk telling a lady who asked about buying some perennials. And this young man said, well, they don't come back. And I said, wait a minute now. do you understand what the word perennial means? And so I realized, you know, a store clerk in a store like that might not have any training about how to help people who are just getting started. And so then people get frustrated and they might not try again. So yes, farmers markets are a great place not only to buy Alaska stock, but also have that great free advice from somebody who really knows. So that's really, really important. I want to talk just a little bit about growing fruit trees. I have a beautiful cherry tree in my yard that I planted after I lost a friend about 20 years ago. And it's kind of every other year it'll produce a ton of cherries, and then some years not so much, but last year I got 20 pounds. It was fantastic, made a bunch of jam. I also bought some pear trees and got little adorable pears the first year, have not had pears since then. So I don't know if I need more to cross-pollinate, but Brad and Heidi, what are your thoughts about what are the best fruit trees, not only for your region by Fairbanks, but in South Central here? What can we grow here now?
So I had the pleasure of working with the Mastermans here in Fairbanks this last year on a YouTube video on growing fruit. So apples, pears, plums, primarily apples and cherries are the ones that do best around here. The Alaska Pioneer Fruit Association is a really good source of information, you know, statewide and in Anchorage and any other orchard as well. I know Rural Cap has worked with an orchard there to do some videos, and there's I think it's Byers Orchard has a lot of information on what grows well in Anchorage too. But yeah, I mean, I think pears are probably one of the more borderline fruit trees. Particularly here in Fairbanks, but yeah, finding those varieties that grow well, you know, growing on a hardy rootstock with a scion that's grafted onto that rootstock is really what has been successful around here, and seeing what others have successfully grown near you is really important too.
Sure. So yeah, makes sense that you should pay attention to your neighborhood. I have an email question here from Donnie in North Pole. Donnie asks, my raised beds have been inundated with grass. Is there anything I can do besides starting over to get rid of the grass in my raised beds?
Yeah, I would say weeding out the grass and try to get as many of those rhizomic roots that'll be in there out and raking up really well. I don't think you have to start over though. I think a little, I know they call it gardening and farming, but they should call it weeding because I think that's what we do more than anything. And so, yeah, weeding out that grass is the first step, but I don't think you have to start all over.
Well, and the thing is as you mentioned, getting the rhizome, you can't just pull the tops off of it because all that does is stimulate more growth. So you really have to work at getting down and getting that as much of that root system as you can and break that up.
Yeah. And then I would say if you can, that's an advantage of growing in the ground because you can till if you get weeds. Mm. And that is one of the big challenges with using raised beds is getting the weeds out once they're established is much more challenging.
And one final comment would be that use those leaves as mulch.
Yes.
So once you've planted your seedlings, then put the leaves. It helps to hold water in, but it also keeps those weeds at bay.
Yes, it adds nutrients, keeps water in the soil, helps those plants, and helps fight off the weeds. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about planting and growing in Alaska. Before we get any farther along, because, man, we could fill another hour easily here, but we're running out of time. Teresa, you mentioned when we spoke yesterday that you're working to stand up a chapter of the Alaska Farm Bureau for Anchorage. Some people might find starting a Farm Bureau chapter in the state's largest city a puzzling endeavor. Tell us what this chapter would do and why should the city have one?
Well, the Alaska Farm Bureau has 7 chapters and Anchorage is a subchapter. We're working to become our own entity. And we feel that it's time for urban agriculture to have a voice. Mm-hmm. Growing local is never more important than right now with the high cost of a barrel of oil. And so having a voice, we want to encourage more urban agriculture, grow more farmers, grow more market gardeners, protect land for more agricultural purposes, impact policy, have a say in what happens, and increase our food system in all of Alaska,
sure.
Creating those
more
connections.
Yeah,
we really need, we're very vulnerable, in my opinion, yeah. And so the entire state needs, I love the movement toward more locally grown and the support behind it. But we do have SB 200 that's in the House that is an important one to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to go to the phones right now. Katie is in Anchorage and maybe has ideas about exactly that. Hello, Katie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And yeah, I'm hoping Teresa or someone can discuss that. It's Senate Bill 200. And from what I understand, it exempts the farm portion of a property from the highest property taxes. And that would encourage food and farm production. But I'm confused about, apparently it doesn't apply to Anchorage, or I'm not sure what's going on, and I'm hoping somebody can help us with it, because this is really important for our food security.
All right. Thank you, Katie, for the question. Brad or Heidi, are you aware of this legislation at all, or is it something
else? Yes.
Okay, please.
So in Fairbanks a couple years back, Prop 2 passed here to exempt farm structures from property taxes. I mean, as a state, we have levers that we can pull to support industry that we want to see succeed, and taxation is one of those. And so SB 200, is it 205?
200.
Is actually being amended. It has already passed this exemption from farm structures, but it was only applicable to food farmers, and this would actually include flower farmers as well. So right now it is in state statute for farm structures and land to be exempted from property taxes for the section of that land or building that is being used for agriculture.
Mm.
And I think it's an important way of us supporting farmers and supporting the industry throughout the state.
Well, and what is at play right now is that Senator Forrest Dunbar is wanting to exempt Anchorage from those exemptions, and we are the Anchorage Farm Bureau is saying we don't want Anchorage to be exempt from that. We want to grow urban agriculture. We see food security as like one of our top issues, and he has said, well, why do we want to give tax exemptions to horse owners and greenhouse growers and floriculture? And it's all part of the agricultural ecosystem. Mm. I know for myself, I've moved dump truck loads of manure over this last week to all of my gardens. I'm building a huge garden. Like the cost of fertilizers is going to go through, yeah. is going through the roof. It's going to continue to go up. And when we have this local resource, right here in our literal backyards. I mean, we want to capture that. We want to utilize that and do what it's supposed to do, which is make soil.
Yeah, absolutely. And so pay attention to that legislation, folks. Thank you for the call, Katie, and the question. Let's go now to Daniel in Anchorage in our last few minutes here. Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thanks to Yardacopia and Anchor Gardens, we started a composting project at our community garden last year, and they hosted a workshop at our garden. This spring, we got a grant to purchase a shredder to shred the garden waste and add it to the mulch pile. But all of the products that I see on the news media and websites say that they can't handle green garden waste. What is your advice, and do you know of a product that will work?
Do we need to shred it up? Can it just be put in?
It just decomposes
quicker.
Faster,
yeah,
but the worms will do the work for you.
Sure.
You know, if you can chop it and drop it or chop it, that's a great thing. I have to work with like more of faster, you know, I'm doing larger scale, so I'm not chopping or shredding. And I am in my layers in my lasagna gardening. I am using kitchen scraps. I'll use grass clippings as long as I know there's no dog poo or pesticides
yeah.
sprayed on it. So I'm not sure what the question was about green waste. Oh, in the shredder, not mm-hmm. to use green waste in the shredder. I don't think it's necessary.
No, it should
yeah.
break down fairly quickly.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel, thanks for the question. Well, I want to get to one by email here. Ken in Spinard writes, I exclusively grow hot chilies in large 10-gallon pots. I typically use potting mix like Miracle-Gro. Is there a cheaper alternative? I tried using Just Good Dirt 1 year and the peppers did fine, but the pots were way too heavy. What I do, I have great big pots on my deck and I'm the one lugging them around myself. And so I fill the lower third of that pot with sticks out of the yard and leaves and dead grass, big piles of dry dead grass, because then you've got lighter medium on the bottom of your pot. Don't fill the whole thing full of dirt, and there's better drainage, and that will make it a lot lighter for you to lug around. Trust me, I do that every spring, and that works well.
And a real quick tip is at the depot, there's a mountain of wood chips, and fill that bottom
yeah.
third with wood chips, and
wood
it drains.
Chips.
It'll help drain that yep. water.
And
keep
add
it light.
Nutrients. It'll yeah. add nutrients over time. Brad, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, in our final couple of minutes here, farms, the idea of a farm is changing, especially in Alaska. In the lower 48, we think of, you know, a couple hundred acres, dairy farms and other cash crop farmers that are growing on hundreds of acres of land. But in Alaska, there are farmers, I guess, making a living on a couple of acres. Talk a little bit about that growth in small-scale agriculture.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really special place. It's the only state in the nation that 0.00% of our agricultural terrestrially produced food crops are exported. So all the farmers in Alaska are producing for Alaskans. And what we have found and why we see this growth in the smaller farmers selling direct to the end user is that it is a financially viable way of growing. There's a high intensity production, so we're able to grow a whole lot of food on small plots. And also access to land is one of the biggest challenges across the nation to new and beginning farmers. And so that's why a lot of folks are growing on small acreage and selling direct to the end user. I mean, what we have found is that, you know, if you spend a dollar locally at your local farm, that dollar can be spent up to 16 times in your local community. And so we have found that these farmers are being able to be financially successful from smaller production and have more diversity in their field. And that's why we see this growth. And it is possible, and we have seen it for decades now, that the small farmers can be financially successful by growing and not large acreage.
And you had mentioned also in an earlier interview that the farmers market will take SNAP, food assistance benefit cards, and also WIC, Women and Infants and Children, the program that helps them, especially low-income families, access food and things. And instead of going for processed foods, they can go to the farmer's market. And as I understand it, they get quite a bit of value for the amount on their cards. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the Alaska Farmers Market Association administers a program at farmers markets across the state that people on food benefits, WIC, which is Women, Infants and Children, or SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Program, can come to farmers markets with their benefits and have their benefits doubled. So if you go to a farmers market and you put $40 on your SNAP card, you will get $80 worth of value to spend at the farmers market. This, I believe, if we're going to have a strong local food system, it needs to be accessible to everybody, those with means and those without. And these programs really bridge that gap to make sure that the farmers are being compensated for their work and that everybody has access to it.
Love it.
7 out of 10 people in our state right now on SNAP are children, and the intention of feeding them the most nutrient dense food that's possible and to use those benefits, like you said, on healthy foods is important. Mm-hmm. And making the farmers market and the farmers successful, and as well as our next generation, as healthy as possible. So yeah, farmers markets do participate in those programs. And if you're looking to find out which farmers market near you accepts SNAP or WIC, if you go to the alaskafarmersmarkets.org and go to our markets page, you can find which markets accept which programs and where they are. And there's a map to point you in their direction.
Fantastic. We'll link to those things on our website at the Talk of Alaska Post. And Heidi, in our final minute here, what would you say to somebody who's listening right now thinking, oh, I really want to try gardening, but I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. How should they start?
Start with a container garden. Grow the easy things, carrots, baby salad greens, herbs, peas, and go from there. But I would say, yeah, start small. Check out Extension's website, Yardacopia. Talk to farmers and gardeners where you live and go from there.
Absolutely. Talk to your neighbors who are gardening. We had a comment from BB who wrote in, I joined the program late, so maybe it was mentioned, but regarding the weeds and raised beds, wood chips are excellent mulch, rot down and feed the microorganisms. Worms love them, and as long as they stay on top of the soil, they don't rob nitrogen, as some fear. But as we mentioned, they can also be in the bottom of the pots. And your final thoughts as well, Teresa, and about how to get started.
I would just encourage people to connect with Anchor Gardens and Alaska Community Action on Toxics Yardacopia for lots of really fun, interactive classes, building community gardens. We have lots of work parties. We've got a plant. There's also, so you can reach out to us about our soup kitchen that we do every week or the free farm stand. I encourage gardeners to plant an extra row to donate to our free farm stand, which starts August, September.
What I love about the free farm stand is I envision, just like we have the little free libraries where you have food for your mind, where you get free books, having a little free farm stands in neighborhoods so people can access free, fresh food.
Yeah. Yes.
I love it. Let's end on that high note. And if you haven't tried gardening, please try it, even on a small scale. It's a lot of fun. It's healthy. It gets you outdoors. And that's all positive. Thanks to our guest, Brad St. Pierre of Goosefoot Farm and the executive director of the Tanana Farmers Market Association, Heidi Rader, the professor at UAF Extension Office, and Teresa Brown, network coordinator for Anchor Gardens. Thanks to our board op, our engineer, Crystal Hyde. Our producer was Annie Fight today. And on the phones, Ava White helped us out. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.